How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, giving us part of your regular routine. We are here for you most days of the week in the offseason. There may be days where we get caught up in stuff like the NBA Finals, which we'll talk about a little bit today, and we will not do a show. There are days where the Celtics news is kind of burnt, and there may not be enough to fuel a show, but we will be here at least 3 days a week, I think, for the remainder of the offseason and a lot more. We'll go back to our 5 days closer to the draft and definitely during free agency. Those are flying. So we're here for you on the Monday show. John Corrales, along with Sam Jam Packard, here to talk a little bit about, we're going to go through some of the what ifs. And for a lot of what the Celtics have been doing this offseason, so many people have now kind of climbed onto the Gordon Hayward bandwagon. It's funny, a year ago, Sam, where were you at this point last offseason when it came to, well, Gordon Hayward's available next year?
I mean, I feel like the connection has always just kind of been there because of Brad Stevens and Hayward's history at Butler, but it's just, it feels like it's a lot more assumed that it's just, it's going to happen this summer. And we've seen in the past, like, everyone's reacting to the fact that the Celtics signed Al Horford last year and they got the big name free agent, that it's going to happen again. And I know the arguments are that it's not as much money, like the difference, but there's a huge chance that Gordon Hayward goes back to Utah. And it just feels like if you look up and down Celtics Reddit or all the offseason plans, it goes draft Fultz, sign Hayward. But I think there has to be a good, the Celtics front offices, and I'm sure they are, has to be prepared for the fact that maybe Gordon Hayward likes his pretty good situation in Utah, playing with Rudy Gobert. Maybe George Hill comes back. Quinn Snyder's a pretty good coach. Maybe he just goes back to Utah. And then where does that leave the Celtics?
Yeah.
Many people say Blake Griffin, but that he's to the Clippers. So after that, the options seem kind of slim.
Yeah, I think Gordon Hayward, first of all, Gordon Hayward had basically the best season of his career. And he's 26. He'll be 27 during the next season. He is somebody that I think a year ago I was like, I don't know. Let's see. And now I'm a lot more on board with Gordon Hayward. But you're right. There's a much more distinct possibility that he would have Utah. Utah is definitely the front runner. So percentage-wise, I don't know. I've heard some people, like Kevin O'Connor and Bill Simmons, they're talking about it like it's a chance. I don't want to say it's 50-50. I'm probably going to say it's like 65% that he goes back to Utah and 35. So it's not fully like 70. It's not quite in the – it's not too close. It's right in that just kind of out of reach. That's kind of where I put it. Now, it's still a pretty good chance for a free agent, but I just feel they can obviously offer him more money. They have a very good situation going on there. He knows it's like the devil you know versus the devil you don't. And while he does know Brad Stevens, he doesn't know all these other guys, and there's no guarantee that they can all get. So I still think it's quite likely that he goes there. I'm not buying into the Miami thing.
I was just saying the same exact thing. It doesn't make any sense that he goes to Miami. I know people give Pat Riley all this credit in the world, but if I'm Gordon Hayward, I'm going down to play with Rodney Magruder and like Hassan Whiteside. Like, I understand the Heat have this great culture, but if it just doesn't make any sense for him to leave the Jazz just to sign to Miami.
Yeah, people, they're like, oh, well, they've got nice weather. Well, yeah, that's nice, but how much time is he actually going to be spending at the beach? I mean, that's not, I think, the biggest draw in the world. I mean, this is an Indiana kid who is not, I don't think he's the type that is drawn to palm trees and the nightlife. So
yeah, he's not going to, like, live like LeBron James and the people like the Miami superstars were. He's not a club guy.
No.
At least I'm guessing.
I don't see him as that.
He's got a cool new haircut, though, so he's a club guy now.
Maybe the money will turn him into a club guy. So I think the Celtics have a legitimate chance, but I don't think that's a given, or is as much of a given as some people wanna portray it. So we've got Hayward out there. And look, there are people who say, why even bother signing? Why even try to sign Hayward? What does that give you? You're going to max him out. Then you're going to pay Isaiah. And there are people like Tim Bernardoni, who's been going on a couple of the shows. He came on to our show with Jay and has been saying that. Do you think that Isaiah, Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford are the trio to Cleveland or to really, really challenge the Golden State Warriors? It's hard for me to say yes, that considering what the LeBron-led Cavaliers have been, have had happen to them for part of this series anyway. So I don't know. There may be merit to going in a different direction. So what thoughts do you have? Let's start with that. What thoughts do you have on a sort of plan B for the Celtics?
Well, there's not a lot of clear options out there that don't involve trades at this point. It just doesn't seem like there's a logical answer in free agency. I know for the sake of this argument, I think we're just going to treat Blake Griffin and Gordon Hayward as the second entity, as people who are kind of likely to re-sign. And after that, the free agent market this year is not not great. There's just no clear names that you really think would be a star. Like, if you have questions about Gordon Hayward and Horford are going to like kind of put you over the top, then if you sign anyone below Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin, those questions like ring even louder. So at that point, do you run the team back? Maybe try to sign, like, bring back Kelly Olynyk on a shorter deal. Maybe try to sign some veterans, maybe even bring back Jarebko and like Amir Johnson. Cause I just don't see, you kind of just give Markel Fultz his minutes, but I just don't see who else you're going to bring in just to spend cap space for the sake of it. It seems like that at that point, you're basically either forcing yourself to make a trade if you're really trying to make the leap this year, or you're settling in with the fact, okay, this team's going to be pretty, hopefully Fultz and Jaylen Brown can get good quickly.
Well, we had mentioned Gallinari out there that Ainge has had his eye on. I wonder if Gallo is going to be a guy that Ainge pursues. I don't think so. But
well, because is he going to want 3 years? It just seems like it's how long a deal are you willing to give someone who doesn't directly put you over the top? That seems like any other deal. It's not going to be as bad as like the Lakers, but it's just you're spending money like on a Mozgov or a Luol Deng deal, or it's a nice player, but it's not like the thing you need. So why spend that money?
Right. So then you get to, well, who can you go for? What can you do? I think that Ainge kind of not necessarily completely runs it back. I think, like, I don't think Amir Johnson comes back. I think he might try to go a different direction from Jarebko. Kelly Olynyk, that's such a tough call because you could bring him back. And he certainly can improve. I mean, he's still really young. And I don't know, maybe you kind of let, because he's restricted, maybe you just kind of let the market flow for him. It's entirely possible that the market doesn't come banging down his door. And if he have that initial wave where teams are clamoring to sign him, then maybe he can come back on the cheap. Maybe he re-signs in Boston for less than what we might think. So I don't know what the market for Olynyk is really going to be. Is going to be considering now. You got to consider like, are teams going to look at like the Mozgov contracts and compare to stuff like that, or is he going to is that stuff an aberration? And are teams going to pay him more along what he's worth and let the market decide what he's actually worth? I mean, what are you willing to pay Kelly Olynyk per year on average?
He's definitely going to get above $10 million. I would say above $12 million a year. And that feels like a kind of a fair market price for
a lot of times in the NBA big man draft.
I think it comes down to a situation where you really don't want to have like Kelly Olynyk's long-term money on the books, like preventing you from doing anything. So I would be even willing to pay him more if it was a shorter deal. Like maybe see, that's the thing. You'd ideally want to offer him kind of an Amir Johnson, Tyler Zeller style contract where it's not guaranteed or it's just short money. But I think he's skilled enough and will get enough in this league that like, that's just unrealistic. He's likely to get an offer you have to match. I prefer shorter years than with money. Will Olynyk, if you have to bring him back. But the thing is, the current roster, it's just Al Horford is the only kind of big man. So no matter what they do, they're going to have to use some sort of space to bring in just more bodies. And ideally, you'd like someone who can play kind of serious minutes. And the Kelly Olynyk type of someone who's a big, who can play some defense at center, and then can also step out and spread the floor, it fits in quite well. I think we saw this in the playoffs, where you need someone at the four or the five to stretch the floor. You'd so want like that kind of center, or ideally a center who could do offer more rim protection like you kind of wanted out of him. So I don't know where the money goes if it's not Olynyk, because I'm just looking at the free agent big list. It's not great. Like there's some names, Mo Spites, Dwayne Dedman. There's some like that's the kind of caliber player I feel like the Celtics could target in free agency, because there's no one really worth it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, you know, I'm looking to see what the market is on Olynyk. What does Taj Gibson get offered? Is he an option? I mean, he's 32 years old. He's a free agent. He's a tough guy. He's a rebounder. You know, he's not really going to light it up from three, but he's an option that you can get for probably a few years, 3 years, I think, at a reasonable rate. And that would probably help us a lot. So I think I'm looking at like cheap, versatile guys, relatively cheap, versatile guys. I don't know if Gibson's going to be one of those guys. And like somebody like Omri Kasp, who has bounced around, but I think can be a really good, versatile player. And so I think Ainge kind of rebuilds his bench. He maybe uses a little bit of that cap money to initiate and extend Isaiah Thomas if he has cap space and he doesn't work out for a free agent or a trade. And maybe he just kind of pseudo contender that's good enough to get to the conference finals, that if LeBron ends up getting hurt, can take advantage of a Cavs team. Or, you know, if something weird happens, maybe they can sneak in and steal some kind of series from the Warriors if they're hurt or pissed off or, you know, whatever. But there's a possibility that Steve Kerr has to retire from coaching and Mike Brown takes over. And that, I mean, they might be talented enough to overcome a full season of Mike Brown, but who knows? So there are things that can change. There are guys on that roster that are going to get paid. And at some point, the luxury tax is going to kick in and maybe some of their role players move on. So, you never know what's going to happen over the next few years. And as I've said on the show, weird things happen that we don't expect, and it can change the entire dynamic of what's happening. So I'm not sitting here just saying, well, we're all screwed for the next 5 years because of Golden State, because weird things happen, and you just never know. And you never know what GM is going to come up with a brilliant way to circumvent some of the NBA salary cap rules. So you just don't know. So I'm looking at like guys like Gibson and Caspi as maybe bench upgrades that you can throw out there, and maybe a couple of other, I don't know what other real, if there's any real knockdown shooters. And then you hope that Ante Zizic can come over and be useful as a big, either off the bench or starting. Maybe he's a Amir Johnson role where he starts but plays 20, 25 minutes, and then you figure out the rest. Maybe, you know, you never know what Jaylen Brown is going to develop into next year. You don't know what Markelle Fultz is really going to be over the, you know, the course of his season. So think you bolster the bench. Don't go crazy. You don't go deep into, like, you don't touch the tax line, and you just run it back, be kind of good, and hope that Fultz and Brown, and maybe in a situation, in a plan B situation, Yabusele comes over and bolsters the bench as a big. And so you've got a bunch of young guys that can develop kind of at the same time. And hell, you're starting five plus the pick next year, and the guys that we're relying on now to be our stars could be our veteran bench guys, and the roles will flip in 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's why the Celtics, the most kind of option is something along the lines of what you said, is bringing in these kind of cheaper bench upgrades. But I think that's why, and even if the league is dominated by Cleveland and Golden State for the next 3 years, I think there's value in field very competitive team while also developing top-end talent. I just think Jaylen Brown improved a lot because he played good basketball with better players and played for the playoffs. I think if Markelle Fultz gets a kind of similar experience, you're only going to get better playing with good players. So fielding a very competitive team in the Eastern Conference while you have these kind of this young guys on the roster, who knows what kind of the impact you mentioned of Zizic and Yabusele is going to be. But when you have those kind of young players playing in a system and playing in an organization where they're kind of – there's this winning culture around, I think that is a very good sign for the Celtics. I think it's something we saw from Jaylen Brown. It's just his winning attitude in the playoff games is kind of there's kind of the arrogance that comes with knowing that you're like on a good team and you're in the right place. And I think there's value in just bringing the young guys along and just running it back. It's not the most fun saloon because you're not immediately in championship contention, but I think that in terms of building a franchise, I think what most realistically is going to happen, and I think it's just a nice kind of safe move to fall back on. I wanted to ask you is that, with that being said, they're going to draft Markelle Fultz, or so we assume, and they absolutely should draft Markelle Fultz. I'll be kind of pissed off if they don't. But that's going to create a logjam at the guard position. It's just kind of natural. Like everyone's answer to this is, oh, just trade Avery Bradley. And everyone has their own, at least on Celtics Reddit, has their own version of kind of the Avery Bradley trade that ends up, I've seen us with the 12 pick, with the 10th pick. I've seen us, we get the 5 pick. There's all sorts of crazy scenarios. But I guess say you settle with the idea that the Celtics have to trade away one of their younger guards. Is Avery Bradley the move that makes sense to you? Because I guess it's kind of the frustrating thing about the draft being before free agency, because you'd ideally like to know if you have Gordon Hayward moving forward. But I guess we're dealing with a scenario where Hayward doesn't exist. Is trading Avery Bradley, making him a bit worse in the short run, worth it if you're kind of committed to this longer term plan?
Yeah, I've let myself kind of just come to that Avery Bradley is probably going to get traded, and that it makes the most sense to trade Avery Bradley. And I think a trade to the Pistons for the 12th pick. This is kind of a salary clearing move, and it's a way to obviously you want to clear the playing time for Fultz and Smart and Rozier. I assume he's still around. So you can't have more than four. And even four is a bit much. So I think it just makes the most sense for Bradley to be the guy. And if we're looking at the salary cap implications, you move him for a mid-round or a late lottery pick. That makes sense to me. That makes sense. Financially, it makes sense. Team-wise, it makes sense. It just, and it's unfortunate, but you listen to the justifications for it. The analytics show that the Celtics over time have been better with Avery Bradley off the floor, which is kind of wild. I know you look at things and you see him shooting a lot better. And I think, I don't know, it's one of those times where it's hard to trust the stats, but the stats are emotionless. And an emotional way to look at it is to say, look at the way he plays defense. Look at the way, he's been one of our best shooters over the course of time. So, but are you going to, how much are you going to pay Avery Bradley? You can only pay so many people. And Markelle Fultz is going to come in. The first pick is going to come in $7 million. So that's cheap, but not totally cheap. He's going to come in and make more than Isaiah Thomas. So that's wild to think of it that way. So you got to pay him. You got to pay Isaiah at some point, I think, right? Or are we going to entertain the possibility of Isaiah getting traded? Who knows? But
the only kind of counter argument I have is I really think it's Bradley that is the one that has to go. I'm more open to the idea, I think, than most of trading Marcus Smart. And I know the kind of the logical reasons why you wouldn't want to do that. He's going to be a restricted free agent. He has a kind of the higher ceiling, but I know Marcus Smart had a crazy Game 3 against the Cavs and shot all those threes and he impacts winning. It's just, there's still so much unknown about Marcus Smart, and he just doesn't have the consistency. I think he was there, but there's still this just like kind of thought in my brain, well, what if Marcus Smart just never really figures out the whole offensive part of his game, and he continues to kind of have up and down performances? At least with Avery Bradley, he's much more of a consistently known, solid entity. It feels like if in the long run, if you want to continue winning and you want to continue being at least a contender, because like you mentioned earlier, things can go wrong or LeBron can get hurt or LeBron can get upset and go to Los Angeles. There's reasons to like still remain kind of at the top. And I think Avery Bradley is a huge part of kind of the Celtics success. And we saw his success this year in the playoffs as a scorer and as a shooter. I mean, there's a convincing argument in my mind to kind of keep him around, keep the team, the core four, I guess, of this team together, because they're still kind of a very solid team, especially in the East. And I feel like with Marcus Smart, again, I know the reasons. He's younger. He's restricted. I just don't know how to put it together. So is signing Avery Bradley for more money really like that much worse than signing Marcus Smart for a little bit less money when Bradley's kind of a known thing and Marcus Smart is the crazy person we know as Marcus Smart.
Right, right. Look, Avery Bradley makes almost $9 million next season. And then he's a free agent. And so you have to consider what are you willing to get? What are you willing to do with Avery Bradley after next season? And Marcus Smart is here for two more seasons. And he's 23. And yeah, his shot needs a lot of work, obviously. But he has shown some growth. And that was his third year in the league. So there are a lot of what ifs with him, but I'm willing to take the what ifs with Smart and build on the crazy, impacts winning type of plays
that he can pull off on a regular basis, and think if you can work with him on his offense and get him to a point where his, you know, screw it kind of YOLO attitude with his and kind of pull that back a little bit, get him a little bit better shot selection, I think you'll see just a general increase in his offense. I think it's there. I do think it's there. So I'm willing to roll the dice with that. And I don't disagree with any of the things you said about Avery Bradley. But if you have to make a painful decision, one of these decisions is going to be painful. I think the decision to move Bradley now and him to a team like Detroit makes sense. They are looking to make the playoffs. They really want to make the playoffs. They could use a guy like Bradley, who is a calm, even-tempered kind of guy that plays obviously really hard, plays both ends of the floor. That's the type of guy that they need. And considering that, I don't know if they're going to keep Caldwell Pope, he could be a guy that slides in to that slot. So if the is they're not going to pay him beyond next year, then you might as well move him, get an asset for him, either the pick and a player, somebody like I don't even know who we would go for with them, but
so is if I'm Detroit or I'm another team and I'm asking about Celtics guards for all the kind of reasons that we mentioned why the Celtics would prefer to hold on to Marcus Smart. I think that he has higher value among other teams just because he is younger and probably going to be cheaper. So it kind of depends at what point you encounter a team, whether or not they're rebuilding or they need to add like a starter to make them a contender. You can imagine, imagine a team like or the Phoenix Suns. They would kind of want someone younger like Marcus Smart, who's still, I think, 23 years old. Teams might want Smart more than Bradley. I think that if you weigh both options, there's kind of trading one or trading out the other. But I think you might get what if you can get a larger return parting with Marcus Smart? I think basically I'm just trying to say I'm open to the idea of trading either of these pieces. And I think they're both talented. There's good either way. I just don't think the Celtics can just decide Bradley's the one to go when, you know what, maybe they get back a way better piece if they're willing to part with young talent.
Right. No, it makes sense, except the Celtics would like to keep the young talent because the young is what – if the goal here, if we're talking about plan B, then keeping Bradley doesn't really affect you in the long term. Keeping Mark can potentially affect you in the long term if he – again, now this is hopeful. We're hoping that he can upgrade his shooting. But the way he plays out there, the way he can guard multiple positions, and you can kind of put him in weird kind of defensive assignments, I just think it works. It just works better with Smart in the long term because he can grow Jaylen Brown and Fultz and Zizic and Yabusele and next year's pick. Like all of those guys, they will all be in their primes at the same time. So, yeah, keeping Avery Bradley now could kind of probably keep you consistent where you are, but losing Avery Bradley is not going to mean a big drop-off. I think if we want to say that he impacts a game or two, like how many games is Avery Bradley going to win next season? One, two? I mean, how many games are we going to lose if he's gone? And then if you take into account potential improvement from Smart, you could probably make up for that loss. I just think it fits the overall long-term scheme. And I don't disagree with you, and it sucks that we're talking about trading Avery Bradley because who doesn't love Avery Bradley? I think he's awesome, and we all love him. Just from a cold, heartless business of the NBA, he's probably the guy. He's probably the guy to go. And, you know, the Celtics will try to give Smart his minutes, probably. And then what happens with Fultz and Rozier and see what kind of minutes those two guys will kind of work out between them.
Here's the real question is how much do you think Brad Stevens has done with Gordon Hayward? Because I just don't imagine as Brad Stevens is a guy who's likely to break the rules, but he also loves winning. And if they could know whether or not they're going to sign Gordon Hayward before the draft, if they had some sort of inside knowledge there, I would make the whole trade process easier because I'm much more willing to part with Avery Bradley's kind of shooting and offense if I know it's going to be replaced by the shooting and offense of Gordon Hayward. But the idea of running it like and just not knowing and having to make that decision before the draft made it much harder.
If only there was some way to establish back-channel communication between the former Butler coach and the former Butler player. Huh.
Mm.
I would like to think that there's a way to break rules without actually breaking the rules. Like,
That's a statement inspired by Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
Establishing some back channels. Maybe they can just go to the Butler consulate and use their technology.
That's, you know, I probably watch too much news. But you can't assume that Brad Stevens, he won't, obviously, he's not going to go and call Gordon Hayward right now. Like, that's stupid, first of all. And second of all, like, he's not going to do that. But there's no doubt that some former teammate somewhere is in contact with Gordon Hayward, or in contact with Brad Stevens, or Gordon Hayward's agent, or like that stuff happens much more than we all know. Like, all of these, there's negotiations going on right now, you know. So there are ways to communicate through surrogates to kind of get a sense of where players' hearts are. And it may depend on who the player is. Like Kevin Durant, until after his move last year, is much more prone to kind of knee-jerk type of reactions. So there was a reason why the things were set up the way they were. And so
it can even be players reaching out, because we saw that story about Draymond Green. He called two people after they lost game 7, was the Warriors GM, and then called Kevin Durant and said, "You're signing." Like, man, Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford reaching out, like there's ways that the Celtics can know. And it's just, you're right. These back channel stuff is constantly going on.
I don't know who Gordon Hayward's agent is, but I'm sure that, you know, if you have the same representation, you'll find yourself in the same place. Isaiah Thomas on Instagram has been plugging his Pro-Am, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And he said his team is stacked with NBA players. These NBA players play on teams together. So they will find a way. They will find a way to at least have some sense of what's happening. And you know that you can't directly talk to them until first, but you can at least have an idea of how likely some things are to happen. So that's fine. They'll figure that out. But I'm interested to see exactly how this all plays out, just in the structure of the contracts, who's being offered what. I forget who it was, but somebody was saying, you could offer Hayward like a 2+1 type of deal, put him back out into the free market after 2 or 3 years, and say, "Come on out! Like, we've got this situation going on. Give us a shot. If you don't like it in 2 or 3 years, we can kind of revisit it. You can go back out still in your prime and get one more 5-year deal when you're 35, and so you're not negotiating a deal when you are 31 or 32 for 5 years and people have tried out paying a guy who's 37. If you're a free agent when you're 30, teams are much more likely to give a guy a fifth year. You say, well, 35 is not great, but that's, you're on the downward swing. But if you take care of yourself, still be pretty effective at 35. And especially in today's NBA, I feel like so many guys are effective in their mid-30s nowadays. So
I was just going to say it's funny that we started off this podcast. We have to deal with the possibility that Gordon Hayward might not sign, and then I feel like we're ending it with like, but it makes a lot of sense if they do sign him, and it feels like it might be pretty likely because you're right for all the reasons. It's like if he were to leave, Boston's the most like logical destination.
Well, I've said my pitch many times here. I'll say it again. I would tell Gordon Hayward, among many things that they'll tell him about schemes and whatnot, but the one thing that I would say, you're going to have to face Golden State one way or the other. Do you have to go through Golden State in the conference finals, go through that buzzsaw, and then still have to play in NBA finals? Or you can come here, and in the next few years, who knows what's going to happen with Cleveland? There are those little rumblings about LeBron to LA, which I don't buy, but they're out there. There's a hefty tax situation with that roster. They're by no means going to run it back. There's a lot of money on the table for you just to re-sign somebody like Kyle or who else is free? J.R. Smith. They're going to not just get their money, but a $10 million deal for, let's say, J.R. Smith is going to cost the Cavs like actually 20 or easy. I didn't do the calculation, but the tax that they're paying is ridiculous. And I don't see the Cavaliers, as much as Dan Gilbert has said he's going to spend money, I don't trust Dan Gilbert to spend. If he goes out there, if they go out and lose Game 5 and get waxed in 5 games, they're not going to be paying all that extra money just to run it back. They're going to have to come up with other options. And who knows what that does to that team. So getting past Cleveland is with Gordon Hayward, that seems like an easier type of deal. Like it's the akin to facing the Spurs, let's say. Then you face the Warriors. And then if you beat the Warriors in conference, well, now you've won the title. So you're going to have to face them either way. You might as well face them in the finals. And if you can find a way to beat them, then you're holding up a trophy. So that's my pitch to him, why he should leave one good situation and come to another good situation. Because it gives him a better path towards the ultimate goal. And who knows? I mean, obviously he's got his relationship with Brad and blah, blah, blah. It's going to be tough for Utah, though. I'll circle all the way back to that. He's very ingrained in the Utah, the Salt Lake atmosphere. He's part of that community. He's been part of that community for a long time. He's got a good thing going there. So there's no reason to think he has incentive to leave. He can sit there and say, I've built something here with these guys. I want to see it through. It's entirely possible. And maybe that 2+1 deal is something that he does in Utah to give them an opportunity over the next few years. And then he can see at 30 years old if Utah has followed through, and then he can switch teams, or re-up and do that 5 years and stay with Utah for the rest of his career. So I think that's probably, now that I've talked that out, that's probably a better option for him, right? You go 2+1, you're kind of put a little bit of pressure on, but you've made a commitment to kind of see through this level of the building process. And then in a few years, you kind of, if they don't come through for you, then you have the opportunity to move.
Yeah, that makes sense for Gordon Hayward, because it also, he's still winding up with the kind of the most amount of money he could over that 3-year period because he's staying with his home team. So, yeah, I think that's ultimately logical. Before we go, I wanted to jump off and talk about the NBA. And I guess I think I might have a hot take, John. And let me be clear. I was at my 5-year college reunion for games 1 of the finals, so I did not catch the most of it. So most of my finals watching has occurred in games 3 and 4. And I think people are kind of wildly overrating is the wrong word, but I think this series is kind of a lot closer in terms of talent level. Kind of people are giving the Cavs credit for, just because they really should have won Game 3. I thought they played really well for kind of 46 minutes. But the Warriors just are the Warriors and had the ability to come back and wax them in Game 4. I don't know. It just feels like the Cavs are a really good team and LeBron's playing out of his mind. And it feels like the Warriors and more so Kevin Durant get a lot of shit for kind of coming together and being the super team. But it feels like the Cavs are a lot better. LeBron is just performing on such a level. It feels like they needed Kevin Durant to kind of guarantee themselves being past the Cavs. Because I don't know. Say they just ran it back with Harrison Barnes. I just don't think that team could beat the current Cavs team the way LeBron is playing and with the way they're shooting threes. People forget that the Cavs were a better three-point shooting team than the Warriors this year. I don't know. I just feel like the Cavs, one, haven't gotten enough credit. And if they can somehow pull out Game 5 and then go back to Cleveland with only one talk, I think it's just like if they can get past this game, them winning the series is not kind of – become impossible. It becomes kind of I think it's either Cavs in 7 or Warriors in 5 at this point.
Well, that is definitely hot take-ish. It's easy to say, and it's kind of funny. Game 3 was close. The Cavs did a lot that they were supposed to do to win, and they ended up not winning. So people like to say, oh, they shame, but they didn't. They should have won that game. And if they were better, they would have. But
well, they played well enough to win. I mean, if one, it's a classic basketball game where one play goes the other way. The Warriors played amazing at the end, and the Warriors are a great team. But I just think it's kind of closer than like you would think, given how much the Warriors waxed them in the first two games.
And then let's pretend for a second that Game 3 actually goes. Okay, so Cleveland pulls it out. Does Game 4 go exactly that way? See, I don't think so. I don't think that that game becomes the blowout. Characters at play. Why was that a blowout? Well, certain guys played pretty poorly, and certain guys played amazing. And do they still have that same type of performance when it's 2-1 and you need to win? I don't think the Warriors play as poorly as they did in Game 4. I think they probably kind of let their guard down a little bit and said, oh, it's a sweep. Like, they were riding a little high, and I just don't think they had that same, I don't know, that same kind of finishing killer instinct type of approach to the game. Like, they're... If we lose, we'll just go win at home. So
I don't know how much of it was the Warriors and the fact that the Cavs came out and scored nearly 50 points in the first quarter. I mean,
right.
The Cavs were taking a lot of nonsense shots and making pretty much all of them. They made 24 threes in the game. The Cavs are a great shooter, like we saw that against the Celtics, where they would just go on these runs where they didn't miss three-pointers. I think the Cavs – I understand the argument being made that the Warriors don't come out as kind of – lackadaisical, or maybe Steph Curry has a better game. The Cavs have a potential to hit 24-3, so it could have happened up 2-1 or it could have happened down 3-0, I guess.
I do think so. It's entirely possible that pulling out Game 3 leads to a Game 4 win and these would be tied and the narrative would be tremendously different. But I just question if the Cavs had won Game 3, if it would have been the same, just would have been the same approach from both teams. You know, the Cavs are sitting there listening to everybody talking about a sweep and there are brooms everywhere and in their own house. And I know that you probably don't want to hear that sometimes you need that motivation, but some guys do. Some guys probably needed that little extra push of like, holy shit, we're about to get embarrassed. And they just came out and won the Warriors. I don't know if that exact performance happens in Game 4 if the Cavs had won Game 3. And they might still have won, and we might be looking at a tied series. But if the Warriors go out and win Game 5, all we'll talk about in the end is how amazing the Warriors were and how not even Cleveland could stop the juggernaut that was the Warriors. And, yeah, they won one game. They only lost one game, the Warriors. But they were still, like, just dominant. I just don't think I don't think history will be kind to the Cavs. You can say it would, and maybe it would go seven, but if they lose in five, I don't think history will be kind to the Cavs. I think they'll just be like another just decimated hill on the Warriors' path to greatness.
No, I completely agree. I mean, a five-game series is not impressive for the loser in any regards, and that's just how it gets remembered. But that I feel like I've switched allegiances midway through the finals, and now I'm rooting for them to win Game 5 just because I think it makes the series that much more interesting. And then, oh, my God, the internet's going to be going crazy with some wonderful memes. And, like, just think about the mental battle of those Warriors who lost the 3-1 lead last year. Like, it's creeping into their heads. Like, maybe it's going to happen again. Then they go back to Cleveland and play a game six. It just maybe I'm just want more basketball because it's just been fun to watch kind of relatively close games. Even though last night or the last game was a blowout, you kind of felt it was close because the Warriors are capable of 15 points at any time. So maybe I'm just wishing for more and more basketball at this point. But the narrative, the stakes would be so much more like it'd just be explosive if the Cavs can somehow go into Oakland and pull out game five. It'd be wonderful. I'm rooting for the Cavs now. It's that day. But I'm rooting for the Cavs in Game 5.
Okay. Well, send your hate tweets to Sam at Sam Packard NBA. Let him know. I don't care either way. It'd be great to have more basketball. But at this point, I feel like it's inevitable that the Warriors are going to win, so they might as well just get it over with. And then this way, I can just go on with my life and just focus completely on the off season, and you know I don't have to worry about rearranging my schedule to wait for the inevitable Warriors win. That's like it's like when the Celtics were it was I wanted the Celtics to keep going, but once it was obvious that it was like they were so outclassed, you're like, well shit. Might as well just pull the plug. There's no point in prolonging this. Just let's move on. Let's get to the draft and stuff. So whatever happens, happens. I'm watching, and if the Cavs win, certainly will be interesting. If the Warriors win, this will probably was supposed to happen. All right. Any other hot takes from the finals before we wrap it up?
Dwayne Wade looked like a Colombian drug dealer in his outfit during Game 4. But that's the only Jams junk drawer I got for the NBA Finals so far.
That's great. All right, then. That's a good place to wrap. Geez, we went for a long time on a show where we had like nothing to talk about. And we're like, let's talk about this. And next thing you know, it's almost an hour. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for subscribing. If you're not a subscriber, please do so. Salon Celtics, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us 5 stars, if you would, please. That is a form of payment to us because it raises us in the rankings. Let people know by leaving us a little review and tell people what makes us the best damn Celtics podcast around. And that helps us as well. So that's it. We'll talk to you next time here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and John Corrales. Locked On Celtics.